We started from Tehran in the intention of prosecuting our tour in Europe. It is now a whole year since information was given of this intended tour in Europe, and it is also some days that we have been suffering from a pain in the chest and a severe cold in the head, so as to be very unwell, with sensations of fatigue and weakness to so great a degree that I've never experienced the like before. Placing my trust in God, however, I sallied forth. In the morning, whilst I slept, as they said, the train passed through a hole in the mountain. After a short interval, we came to another hole of 1,400 ells long and as dark as night. It occupies 6 minutes to traverse it. The populousness and the cultivation in the land of the Prussian are greater than in Russia. Whenever I looked out, there were villages, houses, men, oxen, horses, mares, sheep, meadows, sown fields, and flowers of all colours. At last we reached the station and alighted. His Most Exalted Majesty, the Emperor of Germany, William, the Nawab, the Heir Apparent, also Prince Bismarck, the famous Chancellor of Germany, Marshal Roon, the Minister of War and Premier of Prussia, and General Moltke, now Marshal and Generalissimo, very celebrated and much spoken of, were there to receive us. They gave us a most cordial reception. In Germany, the women are very much occupied in business and at work, especially at agriculture, and in gardening they do labour much more than their husbands. In Berlin and in other towns, the little boys fasten soldiers' knapsacks onto their own backs, run about the streets and play on fifes. How excellent it is that they, from infancy upwards, thus learn to be soldiers. Although the beggars of Ferangistan, instead of asking for alms, play musical instruments, such as guitars or violins, and never beg. If someone gives them money, they take it. If not, they go on playing. On our passage, we remarked a singular pastime which they had devised. They had fitted up a kind of gypsy tent, and around the tent there were pasteboard carriages and horses, on which people's children rode, while the tent revolved incessantly, causing the carriages, the horses, and their riders to go round also. After dinner, we went to the theatre, a beautiful house with 5 tiers of seats about the size of the Michael Theatre at St. Petersburg. The audience was crowded. The play was a ballet this evening and they danced well. The dancers wore strange costumes. I and the Emperor went onto the stage and looked around a little. We then returned and another scene commenced. They danced and represented some interesting situations. The train travelled at so furious a rate that it was impossible for one to distinguish any place. We went on until we reached the beginning of the city of London. Again, it is impossible to describe the prosperity, the populousness, the extent of the city, the numbers of lines of railway, of which incessantly the trains come and go in every direction, the smoke of the factories and the like. We travelled over the exteriors of the roofs of the houses, and thus we reached the station and stopped. The country in England has no resemblance to that in other territories. It has much forest, large trees, population without interval, and cultivation enormous. The wealth of the English is famous throughout the world. There is no need to describe it here. Here was an assemblage of spectators, and a crowd beyond all limits. There were the armour-wearing English household cavalry. There was the Nawab, the heir apparent of England, known as the Prince of Wales, and the whole of the ministry, of the notables and of the nobles, were present. The crowd of spectators was never ending. The population of the city is said to be over 80 crores of souls. It has most lovely women. The nobleness, the greatness, the gravity and sedateness of the women and men shine out from their countenances. One sees and comprehends that they are a great people, and that the Lord of the universe has bestowed upon them power and might, sense and wisdom and enlightenment. Thus it is that they have conquered a country like India, and hold important possessions in America and elsewhere in the world. Their soldiers are very strong of frame and beautifully attired. Their armour-wearing household cavalry are very strong and handsome young men, exquisitely dressed, like the cavalry in Russia. We had reached the half of our ride when a heavy rain set in and wet the people through and through. I myself was also a good deal moistened, but I requested and the carriage was closed in part. The Grand Vizier and Lord Morley remained exposed to the rain so that they were wet through. We arrived at our destination, Buckingham Palace, where quarters were allotted to us, and there we alighted. This palace is the town residence of the sovereign. It is a very imposing and extensive structure. The heir apparent and the other princes accompanied us and led us to the palace. There is an extensive and beautiful garden in front of this palace, with magnificent lawns and beautifully kept. They have a kind of reaping machine, like a cart and drawn by a horse. This cuts down the grass in strips and collects it into the cart. We have to go to Windsor Castle, the residence of Her Most Exalted Majesty Victoria, Sovereign of England, which is 1 hour's journey by rail. Passing along the drive in Hyde Park and through the town, we reached the station and took our seat in the train. We traversed inhabited places, the open country, and green meadows, and at length Windsor Castle rose to view at a distance, appearing like a fortress with four turrets. Her Most Exalted Majesty the Sovereign advanced to meet us at the foot of the staircase. We got down, took her hand, gave our arm, went up the stairs, passed through pretty rooms and corridors hung with beautiful portraits, and entering a private apartment, took our seat. The age of the Sovereign is 50, but she looks no more than 40. She's very cheerful and pleasant of countenance. The Sovereign of England keeps a book, in which each person who goes to Windsor Castle to see her inscribes his name. I, too, wrote mine today. At one point, the English Fire Brigade came, and in the garden at the back of our palace went through their exercise. They planted ladders, with the supposition that the upper floor of the palace was on fire. They mounted these ladders with perfect celerity and agility, and brought down people who were burnt, half-burnt, or unharmed, some taken upon their shoulders and others let down by ropes made fast around their waist. They've invented a beautiful means of saving men. But the wonder is in this, that on the one hand they take such trouble and originate such appliances for the salvation of man from death, when, on the other hand, in the armories, arsenals and workshops of Woolwich and of Krupp in Germany, they contrive fresh engines, such as cannons, muskets, projectiles and similar things, for the quicker and more multitudinous slaughter of the human race. He whose invention destroys man, more surely and expeditiously, prides himself thereon, and obtains decorations of honour. A short repose soon enabled us to set out again and drive to Madame Tussaud's exhibition. Madame Tussaud was a woman, and has now been dead for 20 years, having left a son and grandson. She originated a place in which are arranged the effigies in wax of monarchs, of men and celebrity, and of great poets, ancient and modern, clothed in the very garments of the persons themselves or of their periods, whether they were men or women, even to artificial jewels, such as crowns, necklaces, finger rings, and the like. These figures are arranged in rooms and halls, in standing or sitting postures, and in such a manner that there is no possibility for one to distinguish whether they are living beings or wax figures. There were some living women sitting about among the figures, and however much I tried to distinguish which were in reality human beings and which were wax figures, I could not, until the women rose, walked, and smiled. Then alone did it become certain that they were living women. They had bought in France a guillotine, on which by hanging they put people to death, and placed it here to show the manner of killing men. They said that with this guillotine, nearly 20,000 individuals had been executed. After resting a while, we drove to the Albert Hall. We therefore went to some halls where they had made a collection of tobacco pipes, hubble bubbles, and drinking utensils of every nation. Having viewed these, we went up from that place to see the pictures which people, during the 3 months the exhibition remains open, bring and hang up here. A picture of a donkey was seen, and I asked the price of it. The director of the exhibition, a fat, white-bearded man, told me it was £100 sterling. I remarked, "The value of a live donkey is at the outside £5. How is it then that this, which is but a picture of an ass, is to be paid so dearly for?" The director said, because it is not a source of expense, as it eats neither straw nor barley. I replied, true, it is not a source of outlay, but neither will it carry a load or give one a ride. We laughed heartily. From London to Liverpool is 5 hours' journey in a distance of 50 leagues. Today the train passed through many holes in mountains, the ground being extremely hilly and intersected with valleys. Everywhere we found woods, green fields, cultivation and populousness. The city of Liverpool is one of the great cities, ports and commercial marts of England, and does business chiefly with America, from whence it principally draws wheat and cotton. The wheat crop of England is not sufficient for the food of its inhabitants. Emigrants in large numbers embark at this port for America, coming from England, Germany and elsewhere. According to what was learnt, more than 200,000 emigrants annually leave this port for the New World, not one of whom ever returns. The region of Firangistan has an important company for the expedition of emigrants. In proportion to the inhabitants of London, many more poor people were noticed in these parts, on whose countenances were visibly stamped the signs that they obtained a living with difficulty. Today we have to reach Paris. We rose early in the morning, went down into a boat, and pushed off for the shore. The weather was very cold. The majority of the women and men in France are small-made and attenuated of limb. They are not like the inhabitants of Russia, Germany, and England, but more resemble the people of the East. Today we noticed a singular frame of mind in the French. First of all, they still keep up the state of mourning that followed the German war, and they are all, young or old, sorrowful and melancholy. The dresses of the women, ladies and men, are all dresses used for mourning, with little ornamentation and very plain. Now and again, some of the people shouted, "Vive the Shah of Persia!" from another one I heard as I strolled about at night, a loud voice saying, "May his reign and rule be firm and enduring." From the whole of these circumstances, it becomes evident that there are at present in France numerous parties who desire a monarchy. But they are in three sections, one desiring the son of Napoleon, another the dynasty of Louis-Philippe, and the third Henry V. The wishes for a republic, on the other hand, have great power, but they are not all of one mind. Some are for a red republic, which is a fundamental commonwealth. Others are for a moderate republic, in which monarchical institutions shall be found, without a monarch existing. Others, again, wish otherwise. Then, France is the most powerful of states, and all must take her into their calculations, although, with these dissidences, it is a difficult matter for her to preserve her institutions. The celebrated Rothschild, a Jew also, who is exceedingly rich, came to an audience, and we conversed with him. He greatly advocated the cause of the Jews, mentioned the Jews of Persia, and claimed tranquility for them. I said to him, "I have heard that you, brothers, possess 1,000 crores of money. I consider the best thing to do would be that you should pay 50 crores to some large or small state and buy a territory in which you could collect all the Jews of the whole world, you becoming their chiefs, and leading them on their way in peace, so that you should be no longer thus scattered and dispersed." We laughed heartily, and he made no reply. I gave him an assurance that I do protect every alien nationality that is in Persia.